श्रील गुरुदेव की
जय,
श्रीमन महाप्रभु की जय, श्री श्री गौर नित्यानंद की जय, श्री हरि नाम संकीर्तन की जय, वीरबब महोत्सव तिथि श्री रामानुजाचार्य की जय, वीरबब महोत्सव तिथि श्रील भक्ति हृदय वन महाराज की जय, गौर भक्त वृंद की जय, गौर प्रेमानंद हरि हरि ओम। सो वेलकम टू ऑल those connected as well, and here we are continuing with our series of lectures these days in the area of New Jersey, New York as well, and today we have been invited here in Premarnavat Prabhu's home to speak about Anartha Nivritti, and more specifically traversing Anartha Nivritti, so how to navigate this interesting stage. Manav Prabhu already is expressing. So let's see what we can do about it. Because it's interesting, because Anartha Nivritti somehow it is one of the nine stages of bhakti, as Srila Rupa Goswami defines them, from Shraddha to Prem. But in one sense it's one of those stages that is not only pertaining to one of the stages. You follow. I mean, you practice. You have Shraddha, Sadhu Sangha, and again Shraddha and Sadhu Sangha continue, and Anartha Nivritti also continue. Bhajana Kriya, Nishta, Ruchi, Asakti. Anartha Nivritti continues in those stages. So it's not just one stage, and then, but it's something that will be accompanying us for quite a time in our journey. So it's important to know how to live with that. Although it's something that eventually you have to completely transcend, no more Anartha Nivritti, but there's a huge amount of the path that we will have to deal with that on one level or another. No? In the beginning with Anarthas of a more gross type, if you will, and gradually it will become more and more subtle. And that's the challenge also of Anartha Nivritti, because the more subtle the Anarthas become, the more you have to develop an eye to detect them, to work more subtly with them. So this is an important topic. I really appreciated the invitation to speak on that. These days we have been speaking about various topics, interestingly enough, starting with interfaith meeting, then going to the presentation of my book and speaking on the nature of bhakti, and then going to Gaur Tattva as the charming supremacy of Gaur Tattva, now traversing Anartha Nivritti. So I appreciate the variety in the menu, basically. Because all of those things are complementary and important to have in place, not just one thing or one other thing. So let's briefly define Anartha Nivritti, which of course in a very general way we can say it has to be with getting rid of anarthas. So what does it mean anartha, and what does it mean nivritti? What does it mean? What's the implication behind this term? Because sometimes, as today, someone asked me in one morning Q&A that I did in Spanish, Maharaj, can you speak a little bit more about manasi seva? Unfold the idea. And I say, okay, but first we have to understand what's the meaning of manasi and what's the meaning of seva? Because sometimes we take for granted. Seva. Yeah, we know what seva. Service, we translate it as service. Okay, but what's your idea behind that? When you say service, you have devotional service, but what's the implication of that? How that plays out in your life? You know? So similar with this, we say Anartha Nivritti. And each one of us may have a particular version of it. You know? And it may be correct, but it may not. Or it may be correct for certain stage, at a certain stage it needs to be updated. Because then the progress, as I mentioned, the anarthas become more subtle, so your understanding of what's an anartha and how you have to deal with that in certain stage needs to be updated also. So, but of course in general, anarthas means the very etymology of the word, anartha. Artha means dharma artha. Kama moksha artha means like wealth or value. something of value. And anartha means the opposite of that. Mm. No? Something that has no value, but that you see as valuable. Mm. No? Basically, that's the whole idea of anartha. Anartha means you are perceiving value somewhere, prospect, wealth, and you are investing yourself in that direction, although there's no actually value there. That's very interesting reality. Like you are really perceiving value. It's not that you are lying to yourself. You are cheating yourself without knowing, but you feel there is value there. There is prospect. There is something worthy of my throwing on that. And you invest yourself, and it's like a mirage. You say mirage in the desert?
Yes.
Like you say, oh, it's an oasis there, and you jump, and only sand in your face. Like, where is the coconuts and the ladies? And it was a mirage. That is somewhere else, no? In Swargaloka or whatever, but not in where you are looking. So the same idea is with anartha. We are projecting a false sense of value into the environment. And actually, we are projecting those things that exist somewhere else, but not in those particular directions. So we are projecting artha, and of course we are after artha, not only artha, but paramartha, or supreme wealth, the wealth of love, the wealth of prem. That's the ultimate wealth for us, Golokar, prem, dan, harinam, sankirtan, panchama, purusharta, and so on. So basically anartha means that you are assigning a false sense of value to reality. And you're reading, filtering reality through those lens, basically. And you develop a false sense of purpose, a false sense of artha. Artha means also purpose, interestingly. That's why we speak so much about the purpose in life. But generally, what we consider as the purpose is life in conditioned state is anartha. We think life has this purpose with me in the center, but the problem is that I'm not in the center. No matter how much I think I am the center, I will never be in the center. It's not that I'm in the center and have to leave that center for Krishna. No, I'm not in the center. And I think I'm the center. So that's even more twisted, if you will. No? So anartha nibriti, no? And Srila Bhaktira Kakshyadev Goswami will translate sometimes anartha as a thing. The other day we gave that example as counterfeit money, currency. So you have that and you think, oh, I will obtain so much with this. And you invest. And when you invest, it's some red lights, counterfeit money. They call the police, you end up in jail. And you're like, oh my gosh. No, 2 minutes before I was thinking so many things I will enjoy and obtain. And now I'm behind the bars. So that's how it works in this life also. We perceive so much prospect and so much like expectation. I will enjoy this, obtain that, become that. But through this counterfeit, anarthic lens. And when you are about to consummate the whole thing, entanglement. You feel yourself really in jail. And you say, what happened? It seemed so real. But again, almost like that, but not like that. Wow. So anartha nibriti means basically to get rid of that. And of course, what does it mean get rid? No? Because that's also a tricky word. Not get rid. We may conceive it only in terms of rejecting stuff. Like, this is bad, this is bad, this is bad. No. Neti. And we are not from the neti sampradaya, basically. That's Sankaracharya, Advaita Vedanta. This is Maya. This is Maya. Only Brahman is real. Brahman, Satya, Jagan, Mitya. Everything is false except for Brahman. But for us, everything is real because everything is a Shakti of Krishna, of Bhagavan. So we are not to, in one sense, we are not to reject anything, but we are to, if you will, reject our false view of everything. But it's not that the everything is unreal. The world is not unreal. The elements in this world are not unreal. They are real. So we are to learn how to deal with them. So getting rid of anarthas, we as bhaktas, when we speak about transcending anarthas, again, it's not so much like, this is bad, this is Maya, let's get out of here. But transcendence, for at least for me, and I don't think it's my own philosophy, has to do not so much with rejection, but with integration, as I like to put it. Now, instead of rejecting the world, try to integrate with the world, because the world is Shakti of Krishna. So if it's we are Shakti of Krishna, so we are not to be like quarreling between among Shaktis.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, whatever. There should be no conflict among Shaktis. No, like, this is a bad Shakti. I'm on this side of the Shakti. You are on the other team, the other Shakti team, and let's. I mean, technically speaking, Maya Shakti is not against us. I mean, sometimes devotees kind of depict Maya as how Christians depict the devil or something. Mm-hmm. She wants you to fall into her. But that's not technically correct. Maya is the Shakti of Bhagavan who exists in his service. Someone has to do that job. Mm-hmm. and she's offering something for those who want to remain in that situation, those who want to surrender to Bhagavan. It's not that Maya wants you to come back to her and not go to Bhagavan. She's serving Bhagavan. Mm. So she served Bhagavan. She wants everyone to serve Bhagavan. But somehow her service involves doing certain things for those who do not want to serve Bhagavan. But that's in her service to Bhagavan at the same time. So in one big sense, everything remains in the circle of service to Bhagavan. Maybe we don't want to serve Bhagavan and fall under the influence of Maya, but Maya is serving Bhagavan by doing that, by allowing that to happen. So ultimately, there is service to Bhagavan. So again, there is the problem is not outside. It's not that Maya Shakti is to blame. She's the bad lady in the movie or something. I'm the victim. No. The only problem is how we approach reality. Srila Samaras also will say once nicely, I appreciated that quote. He said, all our problems arise out of a lack of conception, he will say. Mm. All the problems we are experiencing at present, the cause of that is our lack of conception. We are not conceiving things completely, properly, and that's what we call problems. Mm. It's not about someone else is outside of you doing something wrong to you or something. You're just misreading reality. you are not fully educated about how to process what's going on, and that's why you've experienced problems. Try to take the responsibility on your shoulders in that sense, basically. In a sustainable way, not with guilt, but with commitment, responsibility. So for us transcenders, or nibriti, again, transcendence of anartha, transcendence, as I mentioned, for me is integration. It's like attaining a higher synthesis, accommodating things in a way that before we were not able to do so. As we said the other day, ahiri bhaga tipnam nasha bhava kutilavabet. Love moves in a crooked way like a snake, because in this movement, love is incorporating everything and integrating everything. It's not losing any. Many things are on both sides of the way, but love is moving in such a way that it's making everything part of its own plan, of its own equation. So again, when we learn to love, there are no problems, there are no anarthas, because we have learned how to deal with everything, making it all part of Krishna consciousness, basically. So transcendence is not rejection. Real transcendence is full acceptance. To have the capacity of accepting everything and making everything part of a highest plan, again, in a most comprehensive way. Hmm? For example, Krishna says in the Gita, no? Bandurat matmanastasya jinatmai vatmanajita anatmanastu shatruti vartitatmai vasatru. For those who have controlled the mind is the best friend. Yeah. For those who are not controlled the mind the worst enemy. So in this case, what does it mean? Transcending the mind, if you will. It's not reject your mind, but make your mind your best friend. Mm. So we are not teaching reject your mind. We are teaching develop friendship with your mind. That's transcending, if you will, the mind. Transcending doesn't mean you have throw away your mind. You have learned how to relate with it in a comprehensive way, in a friendly way. Because I think if we do not use that type of approach towards anartha nibriti, we may end up being used the word transcendence even. We have to transcend this world, we have to transcend so many things as an evasive device. Transcending, like rejecting and not wanting to deal with certain things because that's wrong and I have to reject and I have to transcend. In the name of transcending, you are being evasive. You are not taking full responsibility And you will end up being inhuman sometimes. In the name of, I don't have nothing to do with this world or with this situation. I'm transcendental. And sometimes that I'm transcendental actually means I'm not being human enough. And you end up being inhuman and your heart can become like a rock. Srila Rupa Goswami cautions us about that in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. He said, be careful with renunciation because it can make your heart harder. I mean, how to deal with that? That's delicate. That's a very subtle, how do you say, the edge of...
Razor's edge.
Razor's edge, exactly. Mm. And again, as I like also to say, our goal as Gaudiyas is to enter Vrindavan, or to enter Navadvip, an extension of Vrindavan. And there we have find Nara Lila, human-like Lila. So there's humanity there. So be very careful that if you are part of a process that goes to that human-like goal, you end up being inhuman in your sadhana. If you are dealing with your sadhana in an inhuman way, hard-hearted way, how do you expect to enter the human-like pastime? I mean, that won't happen. And in Vrindavan we find that. In Navadvip we find that, what my Guru Maharaj likes to call divine humanism. Everyone is human, but everyone is divine. Not only human, but divine. The two things at the same time. So anartha nibriti has to do with that. Has to do with, what's this word in English? Like dovetailing our humanity in the context of our devotional culture. We are humans, and sometimes the idea of human is seen as imperfection. They say this quote, what is? Like, error is to err is human, or something like this. Forgive is divine, or something like that.
Exactly.
So generally, humanity, like, error, failure, mistakes, conditioning, imperfection. That's the face of humanity we know. But again, we go to Nara Lila, Braj, Navadvip, we still found humanity there. But perfected humanity, divine humanity. So the idea is that we deal with our humanity here in such a way that we still remain humans there in the most perfect sense. So we have to know how to deal with that properly, to end there, basically. So we have to remain humans, as so also sometimes I like to say. We are not here after becoming devotional superheroes or something, but devotional human beings, at least to begin with. Try to become human being, devotional, but human being. Hopefully one word is not attacking the other. I have to become devotional, so I'm going to be human being. It doesn't mean that I have to be human being. No more devotion. No, try to make the two go together. I'm not saying it's easy, as I said the other day. No? I never used the word easy here. No? But it's not impossible either. So, and again, on the type of bhakti we are following, Uttam Bhakti, as Srila Rupa Goswami defines it, Gyan, Karma, Adi, and Abritam. It has to be unencumbered by Gyan and Karma. It doesn't have to, and Gyan in this case will have to be, have to do with, again, too much renunciation and too much hardening of the heart. So we don't want that. We don't want that. We want to take, again, full responsibility. Okay, I'm a human. I, in the context of anartha nibriti, as we mentioned before, as Srila Samara said, we want to accept, I am to correct myself, purify myself. It's not about, in one sense, the environment. It's not about projecting guilt or projecting like enemies in the environment. That's not anartha nibriti, because sometimes that can happen also. Let's fight the anarthas, and you kind of identify them like outside, no? Like sometimes I heard what said, my mind is killing me. No? Like if there is someone else there to blame. Oh, my mind, it's my mind. It's not me, it's the mind. And I'm poor of me, I'm suffering. But I mean, there's nobody else. The mind is just inner psychic matter that is killing you, because probably you have, I always give this example, no? Like you have the stomach. Sometimes we say, oh, my stomach is killing me. But probably you have killed the stomach by eating some junk food or something. So who is killing who, basically? No? Wow. You know, the stomach is killing me. No. What have you fed the stomach with? So the mind is like the stomach in our subtle body, basically. So you say, oh, my mind is crazy, it's driving me crazy, it's killing me. Mm. The question is, what are you feeding your mind with? The mind is just an inert tool that will react according to what food you put in. Mm. Like the stomach. The stomach is not one separate living entity that is doing something bad to you. Probably you are doing something bad to that tool. And it responds for you to become aware, hey, that's not correct. Mm. So the same. Mind is the stomach of the psychic body. Wow. So you say, oh, my mind is killing me. No, no, you are killing the mind by who knows sending which messages, which impressions through the senses. Mm-hmm. So my point is, be careful in the name of anartha nibriti not to develop victim consciousness. Not like, oh, my mind is killing me or this is killing me. But actually take responsibility how I'm choosing to lead my life. And this victim consciousness is pretty established in Kali Yuga, we'll say. One of the Manda Sumanda Matayo Manda Vakya Yupadam Tasidvagda. One of the things that we could say define Kali Yuga, we say the age of quarrel and hypocrisy. We could also define Kali Yuga the age of victimization. Mm-hmm. That's another form of hypocrisy. Mm-hmm. To blame the environment, no? And to put ourselves like in a pitiable situation. Instead of being responsible for ourselves, of taking charge, lead of our own. Mm, yeah. And that's the opposite of Krishna consciousness. Mm. Victim consciousness is the opposite of Krishna. We want Krishna consciousness. And again, Krishna consciousness can also become a motto, you say, motto?
Motto, yeah.
Motto, like something you repeat, like a quote, like in sutra. Everyone knows. Everyone knows when to repeat it, when to invoke it. Mm. But sometimes we do not fully play out the implications of that idea. What does it mean, Krishna consciousness? What does it mean to be Krishna conscious? Mm. What does it mean to be the opposite of that? And so victim consciousness is the opposite of Krishna consciousness. So if you want to be Krishna conscious, be careful of not being doing the opposite in the name of Krishna consciousness, which could be even more delicate. Mm. We want to be heroes, not victims. Victims is the opposite of hero, basically, no? And it's complex because we live in a society, especially nowadays, postmodern society, where in general, not always and everywhere, but in many places, the more victim you are, or the more you present yourself as a victim, or blame others, the more like moral weight you have in society sometimes, basically. Mm-hmm. Well, the more rights you have because of being a victim. Mm-hmm. I'm pointing to the bad guy. It's interesting how that plays out in nowadays world. So that can somehow filter in our Gaudiya lifestyle also, without even noticing that. Mm. And we kind of read our philosophy according to those lens of victimhood, if you will. So all the anarthas are all poor myself, and you are not taking the proper stance or responsibility, which actually bhakti is about that, no? About deep commitment, about... I mean, bhakti is not about denial of responsibility. Sometimes it works. It's more clear to explain something indirectly, parokshava. What bhakti is not. And Shastra uses that a lot. When Krishna defines the soul in the second chapter of the Gita, he basically only is speaking in negatively. You have ambaya vyatireka bhyan. What it is, what it's not. The jiva cannot be burned, cannot be... dry it, cannot be this, cannot be killed, cannot be, the jiva is not this, the jiva is not that. And eventually when he has to say what the jiva is, Krishna mentions this verse with he uses the word ashtaryabhat three times. Ashtaryabhat, ashtaryabhat, ashtaryabhat. Which means
amazing,
amazing, amazing. What else can I say about something which is beyond this world and beyond words? It's difficult to speak about consciousness and the Atma, because it transcends. I mean, when you speak about something, you have to speak about that in relation to something that everybody already knows. You follow, if you tell me, Maharaj, what's a dinosaur? And you only heard the word. It's like if Chandri asks you, Dad, what is a dinosaur? And he just heard the word, he never saw a picture. Mm-hmm. So you have to give him some point of reference. Mm-hmm. It's like an animal, or like a monster, or like something that he can relate to. Because if not, it's like... But the point is, when you speak about the Atma, what can you relate the Atma with? because there's nothing that it can be compared with in this world. It's so categorically different. So Krishna is mostly saying what the Atma is not. You cannot compare the Atma with this. With, and what it is? Amazing, amazing, amazing. And this is sadhana, and realize what you are and what's the potential of the Atma. No? So again, I didn't want to lose, but my point is, what bhakti is not? Bhakti is not denial of responsibility. And that's some way of putting it. It's trying to take the reins of your own bhakti project, if you will, and deal with that materially, materially, sorry. Like the Bhagavatam says, Tatenu kampam susamikshama no bunjane vatma kritam vipakam vipad bapudbir vidadan namaste jivita jamukti padesanayava. Brahmaji is praying there in Brahmastuti, saying, those who, saying to Krishna, those who really want your mercy, those who are serious about getting your mercy, which is, that's an important idea, because like implying, some others may say they want your mercy, but they are not serious. They do not really understand what does it mean to get your mercy. They just say, oh yeah, Krishna, give me mercy. But what does it mean to be serious about that? They receive the result of their previous misdeeds, and they tolerate the result of that. And while they receive those reactions, if you will, they are fully engaged in glorifying you with words, body and mind. In other words, they take full responsibility. Whatever is coming, it may be something that I've done in the past. I'm not in denial. I do not play the victim. I do not blame, I don't know, who knows who, even Krishna. If you play the victim, Krishna may even end up being the guilty one in some cases. I've heard about that. No, I wanted to have a child for so many years, but Krishna didn't satisfy my desire. So at one point I was angry with him, and I closed my altar, and I like dismantled my altar because I was angry with Krishna. Yeah. Okay. But in this case, this mantra, this important verse say no, the devotee is taking full responsibility. Whatever is coming to my life is it's not even perfectly fit for what I did in the past. But as Srila Samaras will say, actually, if I would have to receive the real result of my previous misdeeds, this should be the ideal reaction. But Krishna is so merciful that he's sending me this. That's how a mature devotee who seriously hankers for mercy thinking. It's not even thinking, oh, this is too much. He's not thinking this is proportionate. Proportionate, you say?
Proportionate, yeah.
Yeah. But he's not saying that in the context of this is too much. Because they are in the other sense, no, this is too much mercy. Because if I have to put on the scale all the things that I did and what is coming to my life, I mean, that's the nature of Krishna. He's Karuna Sindhu. He's an ocean of mercy. No, that's not a joke. That's not just poetic rendition. Oh, ocean of mercy. I mean, it's a fact. An ocean means no beginning, no end. You cannot measure where the ocean begins, where the ocean ends. So it's overflowing in mercy. No. That's what, as we said the other day, what Brahma said to Krishna. No, he said, I mean, I'm thinking about, I mean, he was already, his foreheads were spinning in the Brahma Vimohan Lilas, you know. And after that he starts to pray to Krishna, and at one point says, I mean, I know that you, Putana approaches you trying to kill you in the worst possible way. We were just an infant born a few days before, and she came like disguising herself. I mean, that would be in all the CNN news in the TV, you know. Imagine, a lady disguises or something, and approaches a baby, like trying to nourish him, but actually she had poison on her breast and want to kill him. That's the most, like, the worst possible thing you can imagine. No? She's like, how can you be so bad? So that was Putana. And how Krishna responded to that? Vatsalya Ras Golok Vrindavan. And Uddhava was like, what is this? And Brahma also was like that. Uddhava said, Ahova Kiyam, but Brahma said to Krishna, you gave yourself to Putana in such a way, you promoted her to Golok. So that's totally, how to say, disproportionate.
Yeah,
I mean, she didn't do anything to deserve that, even closely. So now I see how you reciprocated with Putana, but now I'm seeing the Brajavasis, how they love you positively, and I'm wondering, how will you reciprocate with them? Because if you reciprocated as you did with someone like Putana, what you will give to them? They are giving their life to you, their minds, their family, their house, everything is... I mean, they are made of that. They are ragatmikas. Their whole being is made of love to you. They do not even have love for you. They are love for you. They are made of prem. They do not have prem. They are prem personified. So Brahma is saying, like, what we will do? I mean, this is too much. And Krishna was thinking, yeah, you are right. This is too much. I don't know what... But my point is, again, Krishna is so merciful. So a devotee will never play the victim in this anartha nivritti, like, I'm suffering so much. Why, Krishna, you are saying this? This is not fair. This is unjust. It's not happening. If you are a serious devotee and you hanker seriously for mercy, means that you will see whatever comes to your life, this is mercy. Whatever. If I won the lottery, I mean, you shouldn't be playing lottery, but you receive some inheritance or something. Or you end up being a homeless person. I mean, two extreme examples. None of those may happen. Something in between. But, yeah, this is Krishna's mercy. He knows what he's saying. And if some suffering comes, again, what suffering? It's not the situation in itself. It's, I mean, how I'm reading that. So all of us suffer. But to play the victim is a choice, personal choice. No, I would say no. All of us, most of us, have to still go through situations of suffering, but that's different from playing the victim. Like this verse of the Gita, of the Bhagavatam, Tate Nu Kampam. You are suffering, some reaction are coming, you're like, oof. But you are dealing with that in a heroic way, not playing the victim, not blaming Krishna, but taking full responsibility, and even on top of that, thinking, this is Krishna's mercy, he's sending only this. And you end up tolerating that while glorifying Krishna with mind, body, and words. That's a higher level of tolerance than the one shown in the Gita. In the Gita, Krishna is saying, Matras parsas tu kauntaya shitas nasukadu kalahagama panyonityastam stitikasasubharata. You have to tolerate the dualities of this world. You have to tolerate happiness and distress because they come and go as the seasons come and go, like winter, spring, summer. You have to use your intelligence to understand the temporariness of material happiness and material distress. You know, when you are happy materially, you know, this will end, so do not get too much attached. And we are suffering materially, you know, this will end, so do not get that much attached. So Gita says, try to use your intellect to tolerate that. That's a level of tolerance. But Bhagavatam is giving another level of tolerance. He's saying, when those things come, the devotee is absorbing, glorifying Krishna with body, mind, and words, thinking this thing that is coming is Krishna's mercy, actually. He has given me just only this. You follow? It's another level of, another category of tolerance. So, again, to play the victim has nothing to do with Krishna consciousness. It has to do, Krishna consciousness has to do with responsibility. And you have some minutes here? Yeah. We're okay, yeah.
Yeah, I just take things
home. Yeah, no problem. I also like to to compare the idea of responsibility, which I think is a very important word, a scary one, but important. I think people generally doesn't like when you, okay, let's speak about responsibility. It's like, oh, okay, boring. I like to connect responsibility also with the idea of adhikar. Which sometimes is translated as eligibility or aptitude or things like this. But adhikara means, the word itself is a adhikara. So kara means to do something. And adhi implies like till here, like a limit. So adhikara means something like I can do till here. No? So, and of course that means you have to acknowledge your limits. You are not doing more than what you can do. But also you are not doing less of what you can do. So adhikar, the implication of adhikar is an acceptance of my limits and my capacities. Oh, the two directions. not to act above of what can I do, not to act below of what can I do. Sometimes I call that like two varieties of sahajism. Because the sahaja sometimes is the one who wants to rush to the highest thing without having the adhikar. But also I will say another version of it is you are ready to go to a higher level, but you insist of remaining in the lower level. So that's another, the other side of the same coin. You want to jump into something you are not ready for, or you are ready for something and you don't want to jump there. You insist in remaining a kindergarten bhakta or something.
Reverse sahaja.
Yeah, basically. So those two possibilities. No, which the two of them has nothing to do with this idea of adhikar, which means identifying where I am, what I can do, what I cannot do, and acting accordingly. So anartha nibriti has a lot to do with this, because you have to be honest with yourself about where you are and which are the anarthas that you have to deal with now. Because if you just want to experience, I don't know, hairs and standing on end and all these ecstatic symptoms while you are on bhajana kriya and artha nibriti, that won't happen. You are being evasive. You are not acknowledging your adhikar, where you are now and what should be happening in the present stage. So it's very important that we establish, are realistic and establish where we are. The Bhagavatam says, sedikari janista saguna parikirtita. To recognize one's adhikar, the Bhagavatam says, it's real virtue. And to not do that is the opposite of Bhaktivinoda Thakur translates that verse in, to acknowledge your adhikar is real beauty, he says. And the opposite of that is the opposite. When you act according to an adhikar that you don't have, that's not beautiful, that's not nice. When you like behave as something you have not yet attained, or when again you insist of remaining a baby when you should become an adult, that's unbecoming. But when you act according to what you are, when you are sincere, authentic, you have integrity, he said, that's real beauty. So that's, I always like the definition of beauty, if you will, in the context of bhakti. So real beauty, in other words, is clearly acknowledged to myself where I am and also where I want to be, because the two things are there. I may be here, but my goal is here, but I'm here. So the two things have to be in place. Now, sometimes my Guru Maharaj gives the example of if you go like to, I don't know, a shopping mall. I mean, that's not generally part of my parikram, but it's just an example. You happen to be in a shopping or something like it. As these big ones that you need to go to room to the shop 108. And it's so big, overwhelmingly big. And you say, how to reach such a shop? So at the entrance, you have this map. That mentions shop 108, 109, and that's nice, but you need a second reference for you to reach there. And the second reference is
you are here,
a big arrow, and you are here. If it only says you are here, it doesn't say 108, that doesn't work. It only says 108, but it doesn't say you are here, it doesn't work. You follow? So for us, it's important to. The two of them have in place not only where I am, but where I want to be, but not only where I want to be without acknowledging where I am. Because if I only think, I want to be, I would like to be, yeah, Golok Vrindavan or Nityananda, but you are not there yet, and you may cheat yourself, I'm almost there, but you are not realizing where I am, you will never be there. And if you only over-identify with where you are now, and with the anarthas you may have till now, and I have this, and I have this, and you lose sight of the goal, that you will become stuck there also, entangled in that situation. Over-identify with that, I'm losing sight of my prospects, my potential, as we spoke the other day. We are something, but we can be something more. We are invited to be something more. So again, for me, anartha nibriti has a lot to do with this. No? Okay, we are dealing with some things here. We are here, but we want to be here. And that also gives hope, no? Especially in those days that sometimes the anarthas or the anartha nibriti process may be a little bit like intense. We have some cloudy day. And when we realize, that's my goal, that gives meaning and purpose and puts in context whatever embarrassing thing I'm going through at present. Because sometimes we may be going through some embarrassing situation and we feel, I'm so low, so fallen. What does this have to do with bhakti? But if you see the bigger picture, you will see that the grace of Guru is there, the mercy of Krishna is there, Thakurji are there, Harinam is here, so many things. The invitation to that goal is there. So in connection with all that, this is a detail. And this is an important part of reaching that goal. Even though it seems embarrassing to me, working on whatever, anartha, ultimately it's a glorious task. I mean, anartha nibriti is a glorious task. It's heroic. It's glorious. I always like this part of the in the Gaur Lila when Mahaprabhu, the Gundicha Marjan Lila, the cleaning of the Gundicha temple. And there's one section that Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami describes how before they just are about to start the cleansing, which you know the Gundicha Marjan temple is a whole like symbolic description of anartha nibriti. It's described like that. They are not just cleaning a temple, but in place is the cleaning of the heart for Krishna to be established in the altar of the heart. And before starting the cleaning, Mahaprabhu, what is he doing? He's garlanding all of his devotees before they take the broom. He's decorating them, like implying what you are about to do is glorious. Because again, this represents anartha nibriti. You take the broom. So that's glorious. That's Krishna himself, God himself is garlanding you, congratulating you. Yeah, well, congratulations. No, not everyone is willing to do so. So I like that so much. That's real beauty, as we say. A garland to confirm that. So I think it's good to keep that in mind. Mahaprabhu himself is making that point when garlanding each of the devotees. No? That what you are about to do is heroic, is glorious. It's not embarrassing. Do not feel ashamed. Do not feel this is nonsense. I'm in Maya, I'm in such and such. No, it's glorious. If you are sincere in acknowledging that, in working that, I mean, at least for Mahaprabhu, and we are interested in what he thinks, not what we think. So it's interesting to see that glorious side of dealing with the things. And actually, anartha nibriti is not so much, as you say, as you know, a practice unto itself. It's not that I will practice anartha nibriti. We engage in bhajana kriya, and anartha nibriti comes as a result of that. The more we engage in bhakti, the more anartha nibriti becomes a fact. No? I mean, this integration, this transcendence, as we mentioned, of anartha. But I will say also that anartha nibriti, again, it's not a practice unto itself. The practice is bhajan, bhakti, sadhana bhakti. But anartha nibriti also means that you engage in bhakti, you engage in bhajana kriya, what being as aware as you can about the anarthas you have to deal with. Because you can practice bhakti without being aware, I have anarthas and I need to deal with them. No? So for me, anartha nibriti means you are practicing bhakti and you know you have to deal with some things and you are, again, that's not the ultimate goal, but that's a very first immediate goal. Mahaprabhu, when he described the seven effects of Sankirtan in the first verse of Sikshastaka, first thing he said is, Chitudarpanam Artanam. That means clean the mirror of the Chitta. Purify your heart. Deal with anarthas, basically. Again, then he mentions six more things which are beyond that. So it's not all about anartha nibriti, but as my Guru Maharaj will say once, 99% of the devotees generally have to practice with that in mind, anartha nibriti. Again, not that ultimate goal, but the reality that for most is there. You have to clean your heart, you have to purify, you have to deal with these type of things under the proper shelter, under the proper guidance of the sadhu, and so on. And again, not over-identify with those anarthas, but have the long-term goal in mind. But also have a short-term goal in mind, a middle-term goal in mind. Many devotees sometimes fail in that, and that makes them fail in other ways. Now you have to know how to establish middle, short, middle-term, long-term goals and put each goal in the correct place. You follow. Because long term, maybe attaining bhava as the result of sadhana. But if you put that as middle term goal, you may go neurotic. Because that won't come in middle term, that will come long term. Mm. And for that to come there, you have first to deal with some other immediate things. Short-term, middle-term goals, and so on. So we are in that, again, glorious, glorious chapter called being a sadhaka, actually. We are sadhakas. Sadhaka means we are not siddhas, perfected beings, and we are not bada jivas, technically speaking. I mean, we are not bada jivas anymore. But we are not siddhas either. We are in between the two. Still, there is conditioning, but we are in work in progress, as they say, not towards siddha, not siddhi as a goal, perfection. Still, we are not perfect, but technically speaking, we are not conditioned souls in every sense of the term, because bhakti came to our life and the work in progress sign is there. No, sadhaka means work in progress. No, and work in progress again means this glorious task of practicing with this awareness. I want to clean myself. I need to move forward. To be in a sadhaka and deal with an artha nibriti also is a constant, as I mentioned at the beginning, constant move, becoming a constant transitioning, because you clean some anartha, but something else will come, something more subtle will come, and something more subtle will come, and it's intense, no? But it's important to deal with those things. It's still glorious. I mean, bear in mind that that's glorious. Not to become proud of, but to become like humble, like, I have the chance of engaging in this glorious task. No? That will give so much meaning to my life. And even if I, again, I'm on those days where, oh, I have all these anarthas, my God, what to do? But even if you put all the anarthas you have, and generally we are not aware of how many do we have and the dimension of them, but even if you will be able to put all of them in one single place, and on one side of the scale, and on the other side of the scale, you'd put the mercy of Mahaprabhu, Krishna, Guru, Vaishnavas. And there's no point of comparison. No? Be careful of making your anarthas more powerful than Krishna's mercy. You follow? Because, you know, I have this lust, I have this greed. And you think that Mahaprabhu's mercy is not more powerful than that? I mean, again, no? So you put yourself in the center by that. I have this and I have that, and only the only word I'm hearing there is I. Stop now. Invoke, pay attention to the power of Krishna's grace, the power of the Guru and the Sadhus Association. And they have much more weight and power than all your anarthas put together. All your anarthas put together are a joke, in one sense, in comparison to how deep and powerful is the grace coming from above. It's important that I'm not exaggerating that. We are exaggerating if we think otherwise. If we give our anarthas a bigger size than what they have, that's exaggeration from our part. So we may feel, I have certain frailties or weaknesses, and sometimes we may feel like this cares. But if we put on the other side of the scale the grace of Krishna, I mean, I always remember when Sri Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, they met Mahaprabhu one of the times. They pronounce apanya jogya deki moni paukshoba tattapi tumara guna upajaya loba. Which means apanya jogya deki moni paukshoba. When we see ourselves, we feel really unfortunate because we perceive our anarthas. I mean, they do not have those, but in their humility. But tattapi tumara guna upajaya loba. But when we see your qualities, we develop a greed to, we feel attracted towards those qualities. So they present this idea, although we see ourselves and felt so much unqualified, when we see your qualities such as mercy and compassion, we cannot but feel attracted to that. Despite we don't deserve that, we feel attracted because that will help us to transcend that. And that's the whole idea of mercy. Again, mercy is, you don't deserve that, but you need that. Yeah. We are needy. We have to be humble enough to declare, I know I'm being too bold by asking mercy. I do not deserve that at all, but I need that. Mm-hmm. when you really mean that, when you pray and pray in that direction, help me, as the saying goes, I don't know if that's in English as well, help me when I deserve it the less, because that's when I will need it the most. Mm. That's the logic of causeless mercy. When I deserve it the less, that's the moment I'm in most need of that. That's the psychology of causeless mercy. So anartha nibriti has to do basically with that. No matter how many an artist we have, so much grace is coming. And that's so much powerful. And that gives so much hope. Mm. So be careful of giving your anartha a bigger position and ranking that Mahaprabhu's grace. Wow. So when you have that in clear in mind, we will focus on our bhakti. And of course, anartha nibriti will come as a byproduct of bhakti. While we are aware, I have to deal with that. But the main focus is how can I can increase my attraction towards Krishna. Like Prabhupada says, Srila Prabhupada says, Krishna consciousness is not the science of detachment, it's the science of attachment. Mm-hmm. And that's through that attachment, detachment will come. So try to identify with a higher goal. Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta will say, and with this we are almost finishing. He gave once one interesting lecture he called From Anartha Nibriti to Artha Prabriti. Mm. So Anartha Nibriti means, as we mentioned, getting rid of the Anartha. And Artha Prabriti means attaining the Artha, attaining the real wealth, the real value. And he emphasized that's our line. Our line is not about getting rid of, but attaining something positive. And he will say, be very careful of indulging too much in this neti-neti, this not. You may end up in Brahman. Mm. Because that's the process they follow, the jnanis. This not, only Brahman. Mm-hmm. If you as a bhakta emphasize too much neti-neti and do not emphasize too much what to accept and only what to reject, you will end up somewhere else. Not in the Nara-lila in Goloka, something like that. So again, anartha nibriti is a very glorious, very challenging but beautiful stage, or many stages. And as I mentioned before, it's something that demands the best of us, even in terms of creativity, because as I mentioned, you have to turn your worst enemy into your best friend. No? As we mentioned, the Bhagavad Gita, your mind is out of control, worst enemy. But Krishna says, you can't turn your worst enemy into your best friend. That's not so easy. You have to be creative. How to do that? Imagine if you have here in the world someone, a person who is your worst enemy. I don't know, he's defaming you online, who knows what. And someone said, now the challenge is he has to become your best, very best friend. Like, wow, oh my gosh. But there's potential for that. That's the point. There's possibility of that. And if you don't see your anarthas in those terms, you are playing the victim again. Mm-hmm. Like Guru Maharaj likes to say, anartha nibriti means you take your anarthas and put them in the altar and worship them. Like implying this idea of what you perceive as an anartha, it has the potential of becoming artha, becoming your friend. So try to relate to them in such a way that they end up in your altar, basically. Mm-hmm. It's not something like, get out of here, get out of my life, you bad stuff. No, how can we relate to each other in such a way that I end up worshipping you? Creativity, again, we have to...
Integration.
Yeah, integration and willingness to grow, feeling the need of, I want to make progress. Now, the real sin, because sometimes we speak about sin or an art or whatever, but the real sin is not... Mostly the real sin is when we refuse to keep growing. When we are in denial of, again, taking responsibility and changing and progress. That's a real sin. Not so much doing one thing or the other, but sometimes refusing to to do what we have to do. As we spoke that one day, sins of commission and sins of omission. Mm. No? Because sometimes you think, no, to do something wrong is to engage in the hot sins, if you will. But generally, the worst things are those who have to do with superficiality and blindness and denial and not wanting to accept responsibility. And those take us to end up doing those other stuff, basically. Mm-hmm. So again, anartha nibriti has to do with recognizing these patterns and recalibrating basically, and re-educating and learning, dealing with them in a more comprehensive, constructive, mature way. Anyhow, some thoughts on our traversing on art and everything.
So many points, huh?
Yeah, sorry if that was too much,
it's a nice long
stage, and we need to know how to traverse that long journey. So. Now, Rasa, you have a question?
You said the beauty is, Sridhar Maharaj said, beauty
Bhakti,
is understanding your adhikar.
Bhakti Natakur, but
understanding your adhikar.
Mm-hmm.
So, someone who is doing that, what can you kind of elaborate? What do they act like when they are understanding what their adhikar is? Adhikar can be different places, what are kind of some general characteristics of someone who is doing that?
Well, I would say that someone who is beautiful in that side, in that sense, acknowledging their adhikar, is someone who, besides which is their adhikar specifically, because what are they doing specifically, I would say that the main experience will be that you will feel that such people is like, you will receive like a sense of authenticity from them. Like they are authentic in what they are doing. No, it doesn't mean that they have to be an Uttam Bhagavan.
Right.
They can be Kanishtha or they can be Madhya. But they are being honest and sincere regarding to where they are, to where they would like to be. And they will transmit this sense of, on one side, of contentment, in where they are. Now you don't feel that they are like running from somewhere or being evasive or being in this anxiety of trying to be something that they are not. But they are accepting where they are, who they are, happy with that, knowledge. But also they are in a progressive way working to improve. And again, they will, like, it will be contagious. You will perceive that they are authentic. No, they are like... Yeah, they are not hiding anything, basically, They are not.
I like to be with people like that, but who are not necessarily bhaktas, because I appreciate the authenticity.
Oh, yeah. That's important also, of course. It's not that you only find that in a Gaudiya Vaishnava or something like this. No, I mean, you can meet people who is, trying to be authentic and being authentic according to where they are.
Mm.
Even maybe bhakti has not knocked on their door yet, but they are, if that's what you were mentioning.
Well, they're not exactly like they're second generation devotees, but not necessarily sadhakas.
Okay. I extended that even beyond that.
They don't want to ascribe to like any kind of facade.
Yeah,
that we've seen so much in our communities of devotees,
mm-hmm.
but they're just like, this is who I am, and that's who I am, and accept, take it or leave it.
Mm-hmm.
And I like associating with people like that more than people who are putting on some kind of like devotee facade, like on the outside, all Tilak, everything nice, but behind closed doors doing other things or thinking other things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and of course I will say that. Although I agree with you and I appreciate that, better to be more like, well, this is who I am.
Right.
Eventually, ideally, also that has to be upgraded to a certain level as well. No? Because I can say, I don't know, I like to smoke pot and drink this and that's who I am. Take it or leave it. I mean,
right.
I'm giving an example. I'm not doing that.
Right,
in case. And I say, okay, but also how much you are working on yourself and trying to work on that also, because you ultimately, that's not the best either. So I appreciate that you are not trying to make a show of that, hide that, and create a curtain of devotionalism as an excuse to keep doing those things behind. But at some point also we can say, I'm like this. And this I am like this generally has more to do with our acquired nature and our sense of personality, which still is filled with an artist.
Yeah.
So, okay, I'm like this now, but also I know this is not my ultimate sense of personality, and I would like to attain this at some point. Of course, again, in order to say I would like to be this, first maybe you have to say, I'm here. But that's not end there. That's my point. I can say I'm here. This is who I am now. Take it or leave it. Okay, I take it. But also, apart from who you are now, it's who you would like to be.
Right.
Again, we won't force that into anyone. Some people is not in that stage yet. They are more in the stage of acknowledging who I am now, because for a long time, they have even been in denial of that, or we've seen examples, as you mentioned, that nobody accepting who they are, really. So I really want to focus on that and do not even speak to me about who I can be. And I understand, okay. But even at some point in the life of those people will come that necessity of even to say, this is who I am now, is not enough even. Because you need to have some prospect. On the basis of who you are, of course, of acknowledging who you are, being realistic, but also having said prospect and potential. And of course, knowing how to thread from where you are to that in a realistic way. Again, not rushing, not making a show, not being sahaja of any type.
Right.
But of course, I agree with you that I prefer someone who acknowledges that. But also that, again, can be tricky in the sense of it can end up being, in the beginning, it can be a way of being sincere with myself.
Mm-hmm.
But it can eventually, if I do not upgrade that in time, it can become another excuse for conformism and complacency.
Yes.
That's who I am. That's who I am.
Yeah.
No, whatever I am invited to change, that's who I am.
So I guess
so.
Better association would be of the bhaktas who are like honest and sincere, but also seeing where they want to go,
as
well as I am here.
Yeah, yeah. And maybe they can be in some stage where they will tell you, you see, Namrasa, I know that this is not the all in all. I know that the ultimate goal is this. But at the present, I'm in such a situation because I have gone through this and this. And then I really need to concentrate on who I am and where I am now. And I don't have time and energy to.
Yeah.
But I know that eventually I will pay attention to that. But now I need to really focus on. Perfect. I understand. I mean.
Yeah.
You are open to that in the near future. You are not denying that.
Right.
Of course, I'm giving a general answer. Each case is so unique and so many situations there.
Yeah.
But I will say that's the bigger picture to complete the equation. Because everything, if not everything, can become an excuse eventually. Can become a source of being evasive. This is who I am. Or making a show. Whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyhow. Okay. Something else? For finishing?
No, that was very powerful what you said about, you know, we might become like martyrs, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm suffering here, you know,
mm-hmm.
And it's okay, Krishna is, you know, we are not seeing that goal, and we are not like comparing the mercy that is there also, like,
mm-hmm.
like you said that saying in Spanish, when I less need it, that's when I need.
Help me when I deserve it the less, that's when I need it the most.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I notice sometimes people do that, like, you know, like, oh, like, it becomes almost like, okay, you know, I'm a Hare Krishna, and then you get stagnant, you know, like, you know, raising the kids and stuff like that, and then you, the suffering that comes, you're like, yeah, you have to tolerate it, and you become more, you know, painful.
Maharaj, I'm entangled in family life. What to do? Poor of me. Don't play the victim. Be careful.
Yeah.
Family is not to blame. Kids are not to blame. Wife is not to blame. Dog is not to blame. Nobody is not to blame. Even yourself. Not, because one can enter into the blame game.
Yeah.
It's not about blaming someone. Sometimes the problem is that we need to find someone to blame. And ultimately, there's nobody to blame. Everything is how it has to be. It's perfect.
Sometimes it can kill your imagination, you know, because you're like, okay, you are there, and then like, but I want, where do I want to go? You know, like, you're like, where do I want to be? And you try to escape, but you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I appreciate that you say, like, the mercy, and then ask for like tolerance to the suffering, you know, like, please help me.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes these heavy things come, you know, like,
oh, yeah.
Oh, heavy.
Oh, yeah.
And you're like, I'm a devotee, why am I, you know, I guess, you know, and you become like pain tolerant. You know, like when they say you have like some pain in your body, mm-hmm. and the doctor said, oh, you should have been taking
medication.
You got high tolerance to pain. We become like that in the devotional service, but still we don't ask for the mercy. Please help me. Also, in my case, at least, I need to like.
Yeah, I think it's always important to see that. Actually, whatever is coming is a chance to pray for mercy, no? Not only suffering. Although sometimes it all begins with suffering. You know? We learn from that sometimes. We are a little bit like heart. You know? Like we need some suffering, Krishna, mercy.
Yeah.
But actually we should be, if something nice comes, it's awesome. A chance to, not only to be grateful for what is coming, but to feel I need mercy. I'm depending on mercy. I will say that one of the symptoms for us to measure how much we are advancing is how much we are living in that stage of awareness of how much do I need mercy. And the more you advance, the more you will feel yourself needy of mercy. It's not the more, now I'm more advanced, I don't need to feel myself more needy. No, it's the opposite. The more you realize how much you are being sustained by mercy. The beginning, you are not. We are not so much aware of how actually mercy is sustaining us so much. So one way of defining spiritual advancement means you become more aware of how much mercy is sustaining every aspect of your life and the association you have. I always remember Thomas Merton once quote he made. He said, "The more you advance, you will realize how much." Of course, he expressed that in Christian terms. He's a Christian monk, but he said. Our spiritual life depends mostly on the prayers of our brothers and sisters, he said. His way of putting, like, we depend so much on sadhu sangha, basically, on the grace that is coming by the devotees in our life, that is helping us to sustain our vows and commitments.
Yeah.
We have to do our part also. It's not like, oh, you are sustaining me, so nice from you, thank you, and I remain like this. No, no. The more I appreciate that, the more I want to commit myself and become serious and reciprocate. As you mentioned, we have to be creative and be careful not to kill our imagination and use whatever is coming as a great opportunity to pray for mercy. And sometimes we may not know how to do that, and that is inviting us to think deeply. Okay. So we have to remain active in that realm. How can I? Okay, this situation is coming. How can I transform this situation as an opportunity for prayer, for depending on mercy, for increasing my awareness of how Krishna is sustaining me. It's not happening automatically. It's not like tick, 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 tick. Okay, you have to really be introspective. And that's something that we can lose very easily and enter into this mechanical way of doing things and what I'm supposed to do as a devotee, and everything is like automatized. But we become like an automaton, like a machine ourselves. And that somehow kills our bhakti. Rupa Goswami say niyama graha. One of the six things that are totally unfavorable for bhakti is to do stuff without knowing why I'm doing that. Losing a sense of purpose. And that's, again, artha means purpose. So when you do something, losing the purpose of what you are doing, instead of artha, that's anartha. So that's another way of defining anartha. You are engaging in something mechanically out of custom, out of a habit, but losing sight of purpose and meaning. So we need on a daily basis to update that. That's why, again, Shastras try to relate with sadhus, with real sadhus, try to receive some scar from there, that to expose yourself to Harikatha, real Harikatha, because all the things are the ones that will keep you fresh and alive and realizing this is a dynamic thing. This is not something like I press a button and, okay, from here to eternity, everything works mechanically. Every day you have to...
And the beginning is like that. Krishna gives, and you're like, you know.
And Krishna keeps... I mean, after the beginning, Krishna keeps giving. It's not that... because sometimes they would say, no, in the beginning, Krishna gave you a free sample. I mean, he keeps giving the sample always, but the point is we take that for granted eventually become accustomed to the extraordinary. Now, something is extraordinary, something remains extraordinary, but you start to see that as ordinary. So, oh yeah, prasad, kirtan, sadhusang, ah, Bhagavatam, yeah. It keeps being extraordinary, but we have like kind of ordinarized that. So we need to maintain that sense of astonishment, refreshed, update. No? F5, well, no longer that's used now. No? But, yeah, that chamatkar is the foundation of not to remain in that stage of astonishment and rediscovering. And that's why we need certain sadhusanga, certain input in our life that keeps us. Like, when we want to go to our comfort zone and everything, again, mechanical, out of habit, we need some sadhus in our life that will like pinch us lovingly and won't allow us to get stuck there. And again, recalculating, like the GPS is saying, no? Recalculating, no? Go the wrong way, let's see how we return back on track. GPS, Guru Parampara system. So that's the connection with Parampara. They won't allow us to get sidetracked, but get back on track. That's sadhana, that's daily. And that's, again, that's glorious, even though it may sound sometimes embarrassing. Mahaprabhu still is putting the garland on us every single day if we want to.
Nice.
So.
Thank you.
Anartani Vritti Ki Jai. Srila Gurudev Ki Jai. Sriman Mahaprabhu Ki Jai. Sri Sri Gaur Nityananda Ki Jai. Sri Hari Nam Sankirtan Ki Jai. Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Gaur Primaan.